Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's a show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do stand with you on the precipice of the insurrection and try to make things a little more interesting and perhaps more understandable for you as we go over the edge together in this coming week. Indeed, we've got all of that. And, here at the McBurney compound, we've had very little interaction with other humans since the last time we got together. And that's turned out to be okay, because the limited interaction we've had with humans has been at our own selection, except for a couple of very uncomfortable moments when we were intruded upon by others. But we managed to handle those without freaking out or losing our heads, as is the fashion these days, the freak out and the losing of the heads and all of that. We know that present company is accepted because all of you people are normal like us, which is why there's only about a half a dozen of us. Enjoy the ride. And here we are. As I said, we're on the precipice of the insurrection being finally executed upon the Republic, which should make an interesting week for the week to come. And there's all kinds of other reasons to lose one's head. In fact, speaking of losing one's head, let's go to Boston from the insurrection file, where the urinalists at Breitbart report that amid a national reckoning with racial injustice, workers removed the Emancipation Memorial. It's a statue of Abraham Lincoln, which was removed because the Marxist insane leftists hell-bent on toppling the government hate George Washington. They hate everything that was ever good about America. That's why the statue was removed. It is not due to a national reckoning with racial injustice, as the supposed right-wing urinalists at Breitbart position it. No, this is a Marxist revolution. This is a Marxist insurrection against America. It's the Marxist takedown of America. And it has nothing to do with racial injustice at all. And for the urinalists at Breitbart to position it that way indicates that indeed all is lost. Yes, this is the end of America as we knew it. Let's see, the statue was removed from Boston Common last week, where it had stood since 1879. The mayor there of Boston, some fellow named Marty, says that the statue made residents and visitors uncomfortable, which is something that Americans have a severe problem with anymore, is being uncomfortable. Now, I understand it, okay? I understand. I'm at that particular age where I like my air conditioning and my heat, my HVAC, to keep everything right within that certain zone, because I don't like to be uncomfortable. So I understand what it means to not want to feel uncomfortable. But to be willing to throw off all vestiges of civilization because either I or anyone else is uncomfortable, to me seems a bit rash. That's all. Seems a bit rash. The statue, by the way, which is a statue of Abraham Lincoln actually freeing a slave. Abraham Lincoln freeing a slave is offensive and it makes people uncomfortable. The particular statue in Boston was based on an original that was in Washington, D.C., and that statue was based on an actual slave who escaped slavery, helped the Union Army, and became the last slave recaptured, under the Fugitive Slave Act, which is one of the reasons the Civil War came to pass. The man's name was Archer Alexander. He was a real guy. But that doesn't matter if he was a real guy. Doesn't matter if Abraham Lincoln actually freed the slaves. None of that matters. We're uncomfortable. And so there. freed black donors had paid for the original statue in Washington, and then a white guy copied it and put one in Boston. Why? Because he thought it was good to honor the fact that America had freed the slaves. But he's a white guy, and so, you know, that makes everyone uncomfortable. And so they've torn down the statue of Abraham Lincoln from Boston Common. The insurrection continues. It will culminate this coming week in either the death of the Republic or something else. I'm not sure what that something else is, but we'll all be here to watch what happens at the Electoral College there and then all of that. We've got senators lined up. I'll get to some of that. But before that, there's bigger news than just the end of the Republic. Because the decline and fall of Western civilization is occurring right before our eyes, and the next stepping stone on the pathway to hell and 1,000 years of darkness was lit up this past weekend by Sadiq Khan. Now, who is Sadiq Khan? You would think that's a guy that the CIA is following through Somalia and trying to hit with a missile. That's what you would think. But it's actually the mayor of London is Sadiq Khan. Mayor Sadiq Khan, whose term in office, by the way, as the mayor of London, was extended for a year because of the coronavirus. How does it help with the coronavirus to extend the office of the sitting mayor of London? I'm not sure how that helps. But it was done. Involuntarily, yes. Well, he hosted a New Year's display over the skies of London. I should say over London, in the skies over London. And in the same city, by the way, where Black Lives Matter mobs have defaced statues of Winston Churchill. They've burned the Union Jack. They've attempted to burn the Union Jack right at the Cenotaph National War Cemetery, and they've put graffiti on the war cemetery. On the cemetery commemorating D-Day, Black Lives Matter has put their filthy graffiti. They've beaten police, bloodied them, and chased them through the streets. There's video online of Black Lives Matter, the British version, saying, "Run, piggy, run," as they chase the police through the streets of London. So with that background in mind, Sadiq Khan gives the voiceover for the virtual fireworks display. It was a real fireworks display, but nobody was allowed to watch it in person because, you know, we've all lost our minds and we're terrified of going outside. We're terrified of standing too close to other people. And so because of that, Sadiq Khan got to be the voice of the fireworks display, which culminated in a combination of fireworks and drones lighting up a clenched fist symbol. The clenched fist symbol is called by the urinalists at Breitbart a Black Lives Matter symbol. But that's not really the full extent of it. It is the international communist power symbol, that clenched fist, and it has been for my whole life and probably longer. And Sadiq Khan basically lit one up in the sky over London, signaling yet another stepping stone on the highway to hell and the end of Western civilization. Thank you very much, Mr. Khan. We very much appreciate you calling our attention to the fact that you are destroying our civilization, so that way we know exactly who our enemies are when this all shakes out. Sadiq Khan, now on my list, if we do get the drone capability and we are able to hunt and capture people and put them on trial, Sadiq Khan will be one of them that we will be looking for. Now, from there, we go into the politics file here in the United States, where Senator Josh Hawley, a Republican from Missouri, says he's going to join several House Republicans and object to the 2020 Electoral College vote on January 6th. He's going to call for Congress to launch a full investigation. U.S. Representative-elect Marjorie Taylor Greene, a Republican from Georgia, says that her colleagues will object to electors from 6 states. Well, finally, someone should object, for crying out loud. We all saw the video. We all saw the evidence of massive voter fraud, significant, intentional voter fraud. We all saw it in broad daylight in the middle of the night in front of God and everybody. We saw it. And if that's allowed to be carried off without a what I would call a principled run at correcting it, short of violence, I don't call for violence against this type of theft. After all, they've only stolen democracy, which in and of itself I'm not really a fan of. So I'm not calling for violence against these people, but there needs to be a principled run at overturning this, whether we win or lose. Because without that, we lose everything. You have to make a principled run at it, and we'll see if these Republicans actually have the... We'll see how much guts they have, how far they're willing to go. Because I personally think that we need to be willing to be arrested, thrown in jail, and put on trial in standing up against all of this and against all of these people. Anyway, it's something I've done in my life, actually. I've actually stood up, been arrested, and thrown in jail over things that I thought it was worth it that had to be done. And so hopefully there are a few others like myself and others in Congress. Oh, forget it. There's no way. You know, they'll be greasing the other side of their palm before they step out of the rostrum there, all these Republicans who are going to stand up. I'm so jaded. I don't trust any of them. I find it hard to believe that anyone who's been elected to Congress in the last 50 years is anything but detestable. A hideous, ambitious, lying, thieving. That's just the way I feel. And if I'm wrong about any one of these elected politicians, I will publicly repent. And I don't know, maybe I make a donation to their campaign. I doubt I would do that. So here's what's got me somewhat jaded, ladies and gentlemen, are stories like this. The National File has a profile this week on Mitch McConnell's daughter. Now, we all know who Mitch McConnell is, right? He's an evil Republican. He's a right-winger. Well, his daughter is a flaming left-wing activist, since she's probably possessed by at least two or more demons. The demon of lesbianism and the demon of Marxism come out. Porter McConnell, you don't have to stay possessed. Demons come out. Anyway, Mitch was married to a woman, Cheryl, who worked with Gloria Steinem on Destroying America. That was Mitch's wife. Now ex-wife. Imagine that. Mitch McConnell has an ex-wife. Shocking. I would have never guessed that. So anyway, Mitch and his ex-wife and their broken home has produced a spectacularly leftist, flaming, communist... Let's see, Porter McConnell is obsessed primarily with white supremacy and white privilege, which she's experienced to the nth degree, white privilege. Well, let's just leave the white out there, Porter. You're the daughter of one of the greatest thieves in the history of politics, Mitch McConnell, who's amassed a fortune to his personal family, friends, and donors while helping America... Well, let's just say he came to do good and did very well indeed. Yes, we'll just leave it at that. So how is it that you end up married to a woman who works with Gloria Steinem to enforce the feminism that has destroyed the country? That's been one of the leading causes. And then your daughter ends up a flaming leftist. And Mitch McConnell somehow pawns himself off as some sort of conservative. I'm sorry, I don't buy it. Don't trust Mitch McConnell. Never trusted Mitch McConnell. And let's see. What is the National File says? If Mitch McConnell works to derail President Trump's chance at decertifying the Electoral College vote, he'll be ushering in President Biden, who his daughter feels is not sufficiently woke to stop white supremacy and patriarchy. So Mitch McConnell's daughter thinks that Joe Biden isn't even enough. I mean, I'm not sure who she wants. She wants Lenin at the helm. Lenin himself. All right, so we move from there, from the spectacular politics file Well, can we even move from there? Perhaps we'll never even be able to move away from the spectacular collapse of the politicians, so like Mitch McConnell and the others like him. Perhaps there is no moving away from them. Perhaps this is it. They're the anchor tied around the necks of America, and they've been cast into the deepest parts of the sea. And I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show. I'm waiting, by the way. We watch the local news almost every night, or we used to, back when we could take it. And we've been waiting for the video of the hospitals overflowing. That should be starting here pretty soon. We've now had the wave that's blamed on Thanksgiving. Piled now upon that is the wave blamed on Christmas. And then soon to be piled upon that will be the wave that, of course, is our fault because we observed New Year's. All of this holiday gathering, I heard the guy this morning on the local news. He said, we need to do more of what we've been doing to stop this. We need to behave. It's just, so when I start seeing the video of the park, I want to see the tents in the parking lots. I want to see the refrigerated trucks, I want to see them being loaded with the dead bodies and, of course, the sick people stranded in the parking lots and in the... Because I've seen a couple of still photo articles in some newspapers with still photos of blurry images of hallways that appear to be full of people. Anyway, I mean, I'm just waiting to see that. Dub me a skeptic, I'm sorry. But when you tell so many bald-faced lies so many times in a row and make so many predictions that don't come true, and then you do so many things that make no sense, that don't seem to have any effect on the spread of this virus, and then you keep telling me to believe you, that at some point I just take it with a grain of salt. That's all. Do I think there's more people in the hospital now than there were in August? I do. Yes, I do. But anyway, and I want to answer a question that I asked, and I'm not sure if I ever answered it completely because I'm not so sure I was sure of the answer myself, but I'm going to answer it now. Why, in the months leading up to the second wave, right? We're in January now. Why back in October, November, when we were being warned that Thanksgiving was going to cause, it's going to be terrible, there's going to be a second wave. They started locking down again. You remember why during that time was there no massive call for an increase in ICU capacity like the one we produced back in April? Remember when we turned the Javits Center into a, yeah. Remember when we put the two Navy ships, yes, you remember all that. We had ICU capacity out the yin-yang by the time April ended. Why? Well, there's this demand for it, and I think a lot of it was that certain politicians thought that other politicians couldn't do it, and so they put it out there as a challenge, and then the other politician did it. And then they didn't need it, and it was embarrassing. So here's the bottom line, is that leftist politicians and the news media were willing to see people, they were willing to take a chance that people would suffer and die in this potentially more deadly second wave, then risk the embarrassment of empty ICU beds again. They were willing to risk people suffering and dying in the hallways and in the parking lots if the second wave did turn out to be bad. They were willing to risk that rather than risk the potential embarrassment of building the ICUs and then the ICUs don't get used, and then they're embarrassed again. They have to explain themselves. Not that they have to explain themselves, it seems like. Because it seems like the fact that the ICUs never got overrun in the first wave didn't seem to affect anybody's behavior. So I'm not sure, but they weren't willing to risk it. They would rather see people die. They would rather see people suffer and die. That's how much they care about their own political fortunes. So there's the answer to the question, why no ICU capacity increase? Why not convert hotels and convention centers? That's why. That's why. And so from there, let's get out of this hole. Let's get away from the virus that seems to have consumed everything for the past year. It's a voracious, the most voracious virus in history when it comes to consumption of media attention. Let's go to the decline and fall file, where a Gallup poll is being paid attention to and no one knows why. Gallup has been virtually discredited, at least in the realm of politics, but it seems in the realm of culture, their polling still tends to be somewhat accurate. This latest poll says that fewer adults believe it is very important for couples who have children together to be married. Does that strike you as probably accurate? Strikes me as probably accurate. So about 30% of adults say it is very important. That's down from 50% in 2006. So I would say, so the Obama presidency basically dropped the scale 20%, or at least during that time. Not that I blame Barack Obama for it. This is to be blamed on Christian ministers primarily, who allow half their congregation to shack up. That's the real problem. Forget Barack Obama. Oh, Barack Obama at least stayed married to the same woman. Anyway, let's move on from that. 66% of Americans now believe it is morally acceptable to have a baby outside of marriage. Does that strike you as probably accurate? Yeah, it strikes me as 72% consider sex between an unmarried man and an unmarried woman morally acceptable. 70%, yeah, that sounds about right, 70%. And so the headline on this article, this is from Gallup.com/poll, imagine that. It says, is marriage becoming irrelevant? And see, that's the wrong question. So marriage will never become irrelevant, because marriage was instituted by the living God at the creation for a specific purpose. It will never become irrelevant. It will always be essential. And it doesn't matter what the mores and the polling shows about how people feel about it. So the question is marriage being disrespected? Is marriage being discarded? The bigger question, is society committing mass suicide in abandoning marriage? That would be the more accurate headline. But for you idiots at Gallup, marriage will never become irrelevant, no matter how much you try, no matter how many little boys you seduce, and no matter how many little girls you corrupt with your corrupt and devious influence. Marriage will never become irrelevant. In fact, it will be married people who have to clean up the mess that all of you leave behind after the mass suicide that you're all committing in slow motion in front of God and everybody right there live on TV and in the newspapers. Meanwhile, we go to the justice file to Seattle, where the city attorney there, Pete, released a prolific offender. The fellow's name is Abdallah Jama. He's 29 years old. He has another, he has an alias with just as many vowels in it. Anyway, they arrested him a few weeks ago, but the prosecuting attorney said he had blame of proof issues. And so he denied to charge the suspect in an assault. And so Abdallah Jama, also known as Ardallah Jama, was released from prison, or from jail, I'm sorry, as he was awaiting charges. And what happened afterwards was, well, according to an incident report, the suspect was picking fights. When a guard intervened, Jama allegedly swung at the guard and then headbutted him. Oh, this is the original assault. I'm sorry. That they were having a hard time proving. Police arrested him for misdemeanor assault, but the city attorney declined to file charges because, I don't know, maybe the wounds on the security guard weren't, maybe they couldn't match a headbutt print. I don't know why they wouldn't charge him. Well, that night, when Jama Jama was arrested, I'm sorry, was released, well, it was all the same day. He was arrested and he was released. It was the old catch and release program. Jama was then arrested that same night he was released for felonious assault. He knocked the 62-year-old man to the ground and stomped on his face. And maybe they were able to match the shoe impressions from the old man's face, and that finally gave them the proof they needed. The guy's got a record, a rap sheet, as long as your arm, by the way. And that's the state of justice in Seattle. Headbutts, face stomping. You may or may not end up in jail for a little while, but chances are you'll get out. And perhaps he'll be appointed to a study group at the city council over there. He's got a good chance of that as being convicted for any of the assaults that he has taken part in over the past. All right. In light of that, let's go to the America's most prolific serial killer, Samuel Little. Have you guys heard of this fellow? During about 700 hours of interviews over the past few years, Samuel Little provided details of scores of murders that only the killer would know. Details that only the killer would know. He confessed to killing 93 people over the course of 35 years. Police have confirmed nearly 60 of them. So that's why Samuel Little is called America's most prolific serial killer. Now, Samuel Little was also a sympathetic figure. He suffered from diabetes, heart trouble, and other ailments. Oh. He died this past week of natural causes at the age of 80 years old, serving a life sentence for multiple counts of murder. And we wonder why a fellow like Abdallah Jama headbutts and face stomps people when he gets upset. You got a guy here slaughters 80 people, maybe 90, who dies of natural causes after having a nice state meal at the state institution there, after taking a shower with hot water that the state paid for, going and visiting a doctor for his diabetes and getting taken care of, laying down in a comfortable bed and passing away peacefully at 80 years old. The most prolific serial killer in America. The Bible says, "You profane me by keeping people alive who should not live." Samuel Little should not have been kept alive by the state, but he was, and because he was, he has an influence and an impact on other criminally minded people like Abdallah Dalla Jama Jama. Yep. Abdallah Dalla Jama Jama wasn't so worried about, much of anything. He'd been in and out of jail for most of his adult life. And so it's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle. Further we go into the decline and fall file. Now, how would you think the year has been for America's farmers? You would think that, like everyone else, with the disruptions and the lockdowns and the insanity and the paranoia and the pants wetting and the freaking out, that it would have been a rough year for farmers. And it would have been. It should have been a rough year for farmers. But thanks to the government paying out nearly 40% of paying farmers nearly 40% of their income this past year, U.S. farmers are expected to end 2020 with higher profits than 2019 and the best net income in 7 years. Huh? Can't find chicken wings at the store, but the farmers are doing fine. The Department of Agriculture shoveled out money so fast that the farmers are having a bumper crop year. Uh-huh. Direct federal government payments saved farmers. Now, it didn't just save them. They saw a 107% increase in direct payments over 2019, a third of net income came directly from the government and not for growing food or selling food or doing anything to have to do with feeding anyone. People are concerned that we're going to descend into socialism under Joe Biden. Anyway, one farmer in eastern Iowa was interviewed by Newsmax here. Newsmax, by the way, is a reliable horse of the secular right. Can you say that? The secular right? What should I call them? The fiscal conservatives. Anyway, Newsmax, I have to choke back vomit every once in a while. Anyway, here's Newsmax interviewed an eastern Iowa farmer. And this derelict, mindless, stupid man, a child, said, if you're drowning and someone throws you a life preserver, you're not going to argue too much about grabbing a hold of it. As he grabbed his 107% of his 2019 income in 2020. That doesn't sound like a life preserver to me. When your income increases on the dole over what you made actually selling food, and half of that was on the dole, America's farms have been socialized for decades. Anyway, here's the thing, idiotic Mike, Eastern Iowa farmer, who I'm supposed to respect because you grow things in the dirt. Oh, I'm really impressed. What if the life preserver were being taken from your children and thrown to you, Mike? Would you then have any questions about whether or not you grabbed for it? No, you didn't, Mike. You grabbed for it. You took the life preserver away from your children and grandchildren and stuck it under your fat, swollen behind that's been fat and getting fatter on the government dole for your entire adult life, Mike, in eastern Iowa, who I'm supposed to be impressed with because you're a fine American. All right. So anyway, yeah, so Mike and the others who are on the Soviet plantation, whose incomes were buoyed this year in the face of the greatest pandemic threat in the history of mankind. Just ask Mikey. He'll eat it. We're all socialists now. Shake your hand. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's so good to have you here aboard the listing ship of state here as it carries us all along. For the 50th year since he became a secular psychologist, James Dobson is sounding the alarm. Yes, indeed. James Dobson is concerned about, well, what does he say here? He says, we soon might have socialism, James Dobson says. Mr. Dobson, before I get into your comments, what we've had in the United States since you sent out your very first Focus on the Family fundraising letter, sounding the alarm, back in the late 70s, what we've had since then and is socialism, Mr. Dobson. And we so much appreciate you issuing a fundraising letter loyally once a month or more, sounding the alarm about socialism. Anyway, so James Dobson says that Biden is going to, he's going to support transgender surgery for children. For children, I say. That's lunacy, he says. He says there's going to be abortion on demand without any limits. Christians are going to be forced to fund abortions in their health insurance plans. So you notice how the, you were all familiar with moving the goalposts, right? With Fauci and all the governing officials who've been stringing us along with this pandemic hysteria for the past year. Well, the left has successfully moved the goalposts on Mr. Dobson, and he doesn't even realize it. Doesn't he realize that coming out against transgender surgery for children, now that's replacing his former position, which was against transgender surgery, which replaced his former position was that he was against transgenderism, which replaced his former position that he was against sexual immorality in general. And now, instead of just opposing the taking of innocent life and the slaughter of innocent children, Dobson decries abortion on demand without any limits. I mean, there has to be some reasonable limits, right? Huh? Excuse me, Mr. Dobson. I think in 1980, you were seeking no limits on abortion, except all abortion should be outlawed. But that's not the position anymore. He just doesn't want to pay for it through his insurance plan. Come on, that's a reasonable. All right, Mr. Dobson. He says our government appears to be about to abandon this system, the one that gave us transgender surgery, abortion with some limits. Anyway, he says we're going to abandon this system in the next month. So what does that mean? When Mr. Dobson warns us about the next month, he's obviously talking about the Biden inauguration threat and the Georgia runoffs. That's what Mr. Dobson is talking about because that's all he ever talks about are political events around which he can get on the news and raise some money for his various charities that have helped him to fund a very, very successful retirement in his part-time radio gig. And anyway, he says, if the government can dictate, demand, tax, and penalize its citizens without accountability, democracy will have ceased to exist. How is that possible? I believe this is what the far left has in store for us. The far left? What happened to the left, Mr. Oh, that's right, the left. You stopped talking about the left 25 years ago. Back when you stopped talking about ending abortion, you started out about talking about limitation. Okay, so now it's just the far left, not the left. They're going to add 2 senatorial seats. They're going to appoint liberal judges. They're going to create new states. They're going to pack the Supreme Court. It's the death of the filibuster. They're going to eliminate the Electoral College, says James Dobson, hysterically trying to save us. Thank you, Mr. Dobson. He warns us that first there'll be an oligarchy and then we'll have socialism. Shocking. Thankfully, James Dobson has been at the helm looking out for us all these years, ladies and gentlemen, or we might have never seen this coming. Now, Dobson, keep in mind, says he's most concerned about the nation's children. That's who he's most concerned about. He warns that the LGBTQ ideology, which already predominates the nation's schools, will become even more radicalized. Millions of boys and girls will be taught a godless curriculum. Parents, says Mr. Dobson, does this worry you? An entire generation of young Americans is at risk as we speak. Mr. Dobson, you could have written this letter in 1985 and told people to get their kids out of the government schools, but you didn't. No, that would have hurt your bottom line. The fundraising letters wouldn't have produced quite the return on investment had you warned people every time you had the opportunity to get their kids out of the government schools, and that abortion, there can be no limits on abortion, except it should be illegal to kill innocent people. Sexual immorality should be a crime, not just transgender surgeries on children. Adultery should be a crime. But no, Mr. Dobson abandoned all that, I think, probably his third year in secular psychobabble school. Get out of here, Mr. Dobson. would you just shut up and get out of here? I'm so sick of this guy. The fact that he gets any news media coverage proves he's an embarrassment to anything that's right and good. And anyone who stands to the right and on the right side of history, James Dobson is your subtle, crafty enemy. So from there, we go to the widespread guilt complex file where Rush Limbaugh signed off last year. Lord willing, he's back on the air this week. He says, here's Rush Limbaugh in his sign-off a couple of weeks ago. He said, I've had all these years to get to people to explain conservatism, and despite all that, Americans are willing to lose their freedom. How did I not reach them? Says Rush Limbaugh. He goes on, there's a large part of me that feels like I have failed in such a major way, in a political sense. This was two Wednesdays ago in his final broadcast. He then comments, how in the world is my side losing? And finally, he says, Rush Limbaugh says, quote, in the broad scheme of things, who can deny that what's happened to me has been overwhelmingly successful? I'm not doing that. I'm not saying that what happened to me has not been successful. And so I put this in the widespread guilt complex file, not because I want to hammer Rush Limbaugh or say anything bad about Rush Limbaugh. I've done plenty of that over the years. But what I think Rush Limbaugh is realizing and stating in his own way is that all of us who have done anything in the past 30 years to warn people that if you don't cut this out, things are going to end badly, all of us are looking in the mirror wondering, how could we have possibly lost so many people? How is it that we've lost it? And I think it all comes down to Rush's final statement here. In the broad scheme of things, who can deny that what's happened to me has been overwhelmingly successful? So all of us have to look in the mirror and say, you know what? I've been comfortable this whole time. I've been warm when it was cold. I've been cooled when it was too hot. I've been comfortable and medicated when I need it. And really haven't even suffered a hangnail in the pursuit of trying to ward off the impending collapse of Western civilization. And I think we all look in the mirror and we think, you know, maybe it's because we put our own personal, financial comfort and success above what should have been a fairly obvious freight train approaching our way of life. And so I feel the same way, Rush. How is it possible that so many of my neighbors have gone so far astray as to cast off everything in the face of some perceived potential threat and just throw it all away? How is it that I lost that? I don't know that it's ever been any other way, and I don't know that it can be any other way. I mean, had we gone into the streets and flagellized each other and bled and begged and cried, would it have made a difference? I know people who did some version of that for their entire lives, lived lives of destitution and poverty so that they could go out and just tell people that if you don't cut this all out, that this is going to end badly. And what did their efforts do? Well, they lost too. So, Rush, I think I feel your pains, so to speak, and I'm feeling it too, but I don't know that there was any way around this because this is the way of all flesh. This is the way it goes. And I'm just glad that at least as far as I can tell for the not too distant future, I will be here to help you people try to clean this mess up. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for making it around the bend with us, so to speak. So we dive deeper into the insurrection file because the insurrection continues. And a report from, let's see, I got this from the National Pulse. We have a report coming to us from a group. Can I find the name of the group? Well, I'll get to it. It turns out CNN, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and NBC, along with Forbes, the Financial Times, Newsweek, Bloomberg, Reuters, ABC News, The Economist, The Wall Street Journal, AFP, Time Magazine, The LA Times, The Hill, BBC, and The Atlantic. Is there anyone I missed? Have all accepted private dinners and sponsored groups with the China United States Exchange Foundation. This Communist Party-funded group seek a gain of favorable coverage and disseminate a positive message regarding China. Yeah. Now, this is according to public records at the Justice Department's Foreign Agents Registration. The Foreign Agents Registration Act requires these groups to file, and this is what's revealing these relationships spanning well over 10 years between virtually every establishment Every establishment media outlet and the Chinese Communist Party. Our group also target American University to fund a research, a high-level dialogue, and an exchange program. So they've infected the universities. And so this isn't a secret conspiracy. This is an open conspiracy by globalist communists to export communism all over the world and conquer the world. That's what China wants to do. And they've done it not with guns and bombs, but with shrimp and T-bone steaks and research funding dollars. They've done it with money. All of the old reliable vices, sex, money, and power. That's how they've done it. And they've doled out the sex, money, and power to all the right people at all the right times. And there you go. Now let's go to the widespread tyranny file where we have a report. This time this is the Tech Transparency Project. And they say that as cheap labor disappeared, China's manufacturers turned to forced labor using the Uyghurs and others entangled in China's penal system, entangled in the penal system. You know what that means to be entangled in China's penal system? That means to be arrested on no criminally valid charge, thrown into prison, and forced to work. That's what that means. According to the Tech Transparency Project, the CCP has replaced more than 1 million Muslims in concentration camps to produce everything from cotton to electronics for everyone from Apple to Tesla and Amazon. They say Apple's use of forced labor in its supply chain goes far beyond what the company has acknowledged. No way! Apple should be suing these guys. They should want their day in court to prove. Now, an Apple spokesman says they've ensured everyone that none of its suppliers are using Uyghur labor. He says, quote, Apple has zero tolerance for, forced labor. Any violation has, immediate consequences, including, possible business termination, unquote. That's Apple's spokesman. Very trustworthy, reliable guy. By the way, just in case you were wondering, the foreign ministry in Beijing insists that the forced labor is a non-existent in China. It does not exist. This is foolish to even think this. Come, we will take you on a tour. We will show you everything. Would you like a dinner? Do you like a Chinese food? What you like? We take you to dinner, too. Beijing's media, in fact, publishes videos that portray indentured servants like the Uyghurs as upwardly mobile social climbers. That's right. Oh, these Uyghurs, they learn new skills. They're learning how to code. They're very happy. Look, they even very, very tall apartment that we give for them. Very good for them. Anyway, this all came out in a Washington Post report. And the The rather insightful authors over at Zero Hedge say this Washington report, this Washington Post report, might be the first in a series as the Jeff Bezos Stone paper launches a full-on assault against one of its biggest rivals, Apple. Most of this article is about how Apple's suppliers are filled with forced labor. And so, does it matter if Joe Biden is the president, if Jeff Bezos is the head of Amazon? Does the president even matter? I mean, it just doesn't seem to matter nearly as much as who is in charge of Jeff Bezos. And unfortunately, that's Jeff Bezos. Or is it Bezos? Am I mispronouncing his name? I apologize if I'm mispronouncing Jeff Bezos' name. I don't know what it is, and I don't care. Jeff Bezos is ruled by Jeff Bezos and no one else, and that's dangerous. And I'm talking about from a personal perspective of the fate of his own soul. And when someone's own soul is on a greased pole to hell, he has the capacity to inflict massive amounts of damage on the people and the political organizations in his midst and in his wake. From the Dim New World file, Neil Ferguson is back. What? Neil Ferguson? He was interviewed on Christmas Day. Let's see here, and he says that there is an enormous cost associated with lockdowns. Shazam, Neil, really? Neil Ferguson, by the way, just in case you don't know, he is the professor in England who predicted 2 million people would die in America. And anyway, his model came out and scared everybody, freaked everybody out. Turned out to be debunked as utter bogus, just nonsense. But that doesn't matter. He still gets interviewed. And he's still on the board of something over there. Anyway, Neil says, quote, I think people's sense of what is possible in terms of control changed quite dramatically between January and March. If China had not done it, the year would have been very different. We were all skeptical at first that China had flattened the curve. I thought it was a massive cover-up by the Chinese, but then we decided to go ahead and do it. We all thought this is a communist one-party state. We could never get away with this. We couldn't get away with it in Europe, for crying out. What? Well, then Italy did it, and we realized we can get away with it. And we did it, and we're still doing it. And we're going to keep doing it because no one can stop us. We're mad, I tell you, we're mad. All right, that's Neil Ferguson admitting that he basically copied China. Which I said, I forget when I said that, but it was a long time ago. Meanwhile, we go into the science really file, where a Harvard professor, Avi Loeb, a Jewish Harvard professor, by the way, he's not just a professor. He's the chair of the Department of Astronomy. And he has a new book about aliens. Uh-huh. He says aliens have already visited us. He cites an object that recently crossed our solar system. He says this wasn't just an interstellar object. This was a piece of alien technology. That's right. The object intercepted our solar system back in September. It was dubbed Oumuamua, Oumuamua, which is Hawaiian for something. Oumuamua. They say that observing Oumuamua leads them to believe it was not just a rock. It was actually maybe a spaceship, some space junk, something cast aside by an extraordinarily sophisticated advanced civilization. And they say if more evidence is found, we Earthlings would have to redefine our place in the universe. Aha! This is it, right? This is the point of this whole article. So the headline says, a Harvard professor says an alien visited in 2017 and more are coming! And most of the empty skulls full of emptiness and vacuousness in the millennial and beyond, they read the headline and they, well, a Harvard professor says they're already here, man. Dude, this is so cool, man. And anyway, Avi says, quote, finding aliens, he says, would put us in perspective. If we're not alone, are we the smartest kids on the block? I mean, if there was a species that eliminated itself through war or changing the climate, we can get our act together and behave better. Behave better. So that we don't destroy ourselves through climate change.
Maybe they are better.
So Mr. Avi Loeb, he calls himself a scientist, but he says we need to behave better, which is a moral statement made in the context, of course, of climate change. So Avi Loeb is an atheist of Hebrew descent who wants to diminish his own value. He says we need to redefine our place in the universe, meaning we're not number one. Why? Because Avi Loeb has been incredibly comfortable for his entire life. He's made an enormous amount of money for contributing virtually nothing to the advancement of anyone. So he's got a guilt complex about that. And so he wants to knock his own status as the preeminent biological life form in the universe. He just wants to knock that down a few pegs. And he's happy to drag all the rest of you down with it as long as a few of the co-eds will sleep with him once in a while. All right, that's my rather jaded and, yeah, take on higher education and the whole thing for science. I've got another one from the science really file. Where, what do we have here? There's a new breakthrough. A project with a billionaire, Yuri Milner, pledged $100 million to create a breakthrough, the Breakthrough Listen Project, which is a radio-based project searching for life in the universe. They go on how SETI's been a joke, even though we've been throwing money at it for 60 years. They say telescopes just, we need radio. Because all the telescopes have failed. Everywhere we look, there's nothing. Despite the fact that Avi Loeb over at Harvard thinks a giant piece of space junk just skimmed right under our noses. Other people, barely as rational, if maybe perhaps less so, talk about now that they've heard a breakthrough signal. So they got this radio array set up to listen for signals from outer space. Why? So that we can hear the more advanced, intelligent civilization tell us how we can stop with all the CO2. How we can behave better. We'll get a signal. They're looking for a signal from the heavens on how to behave better, is what they're doing, ironically enough. Well, now their giant radio array, which is called Breakthrough Listen, has its first official candidate signal. This is a signal that could be a candidate of a radio signal from another civilization. Yet it's called BLC-1, is what they've named. And I would have gone with another letter after the B, but that's okay. They're calling it BLC-1. And the writers at the Washington Post ask, is this finally our moment of contact? Well, the answer is probably no. But that's far enough down in the article that we've already gotten your attention and you're convinced there are aliens. So you can just move on now. Anyway, scientists say it's probably a signal from Earth that, you know, we're hearing. Anyway, but that doesn't stop us from... the conclusion that it's actually a radio signal from Earth doesn't diffuse the excitement. It's a cause for celebration in just having a candidate signal, even if it is from WKRP in Cincinnati from 30 years ago. Because something remarkable is happening in the science of intelligence beyond Earth. It's the new age of techno-signatures. But the one we have, we think it's probably from... That doesn't matter. We're excited about the new age. We got something else to talk about that most people are too stupid to really comprehend, and they'll just think we're talking to aliens, which is all we want. Scientists worldwide are building a consensus. By the way, they're building a census of alien planets. That's right. These are planets in this Goldilocks zone. You know what the Goldilocks zone is, folks? That's where surface temperatures are between freezing and boiling, which is what you need for life to form. Well, freezing doesn't really work, and boiling doesn't quite work. So, in fact, almost nothing works except, well, I don't want to get into it. It's so extraordinarily sophisticated, what happens on Earth, that let's just say it's a little more complex than the temperature is generally between freezing and boiling. I mean, I just mentioned HVAC and how we like to be comfortable. So that's like saying being comfortable means being somewhere between freezing and boiling. I think it's actually, there's a finer point to it than all that, but let's not go, because the new signal, BLC1, they say this type of thing will always generate a buzz. This will always generate a buzz. Oh yeah, like this fake news article I wrote in the margins. The truth about intelligent exo-civilizations is that it's probably going to take a lot of time and extraordinary effort. But that's the price you pay for great science, says no one in particular. What is great science? Is that better than good science? Is there average science, subpar science? Because for me, science is you do an experiment, you repeat the experiment, you come to a conclusion. I mean, it's not good, bad, great, phenomenal, spectacular. It's science or it's something else. But this is great science. In fact, if you stick with our great science, you'll know something extraordinary. Really extraordinary? Like 2 plus 2 equals 4. That's not extraordinary. 2 plus 2 equals 3 would be incorrect, but I wouldn't call it less than extraordinary. It's just, but anyway, this is, they're all excited and the juices are flowing. They say this is all about the journey. The journey taking us to the shores of alien worlds. And it's really only getting started. Giving themselves plenty of time to write grant letters and keep all that going. Meanwhile, we go into the dim new world file where the World Health Organization is warning about super gonorrhea. It's on the rise. That's right. It's a highly infective drug-resistant bug that may become untreatable. It is. It is. But now enough people at the WHO actually have it that they're starting to get seriously concerned. So they say that it's the overuse of antibiotics during the pandemic is actually helping to mutate the super gonorrhea. Uh-huh. And the WHO director comes out and he says, not only is there now super gonorrhea, you should be very worried about the super gonorrhea, but there are also more pandemics coming. More pandemics every year is. Then this should encourage countries to prepare to prevent, detect, and mitigate emergencies of all kinds, whether they are naturally occurring epidemics or deliberate events. Deliberate events, Mr. Tedros? Was that a threat? Ah. They say epidemics are a fact of life. Shock. Really? Epidemics are a fact of life? I never knew that before. I thought they were the most terrifying thing that ever happened, and that we should throw off all sense of any civilized behavior and cower. And hide, and shame each other, and be suspicious of each other, and turn each other in. Eh. Mr. Tedros, those of us who have half a brain knew that epidemics have always been a fact of life. Always. We just never completely freaked out before and copied tyrannical communist lockdown dictator. We never did that before. But you did it, Mr. Tedros. You were behind it. Anthony Fauci did it. Jared Polis did it. Anthony Cuomo did it. Andrew Cuomo, Anthony Cuomo, Fredo Cuomo, whatever. He did it. Gavin Newsom did it out in California. All of you did it. They are behaving like communist tyrants. And there's a reason they're behaving like communist tyrants, because that was always just barely under the surface. We lived in an age gilded by a presentation of something not true. A false face, a mask, so to speak. Newsom and Cuomo and Fauci and the rest and the Michigan dictator, what's her name? Gretchen Whitmer. They all wore this thinly gilded mask of civility. But underneath it, they're roaring lions looking about for who they can devour. And right now, they are on the make. Oh, they're openly on the make. They've been on the make for my entire adult life. Now they're openly on the make. and nobody has the guts to restrain them. And that goes from President Trump all the way on down. Don't have the courage to restrain them for fear of political repercussions. And when the politicians who need to have guts are more concerned with political ramifications, that's how you lose a civilization, you lose a war, you lose all of that. From the widespread tyranny file, we hit a record every day now. We're hitting new death toll records for COVID-19. Last Wednesday, more than 3,900 people died of COVID. A new record! And there's been a record every day since then. It's terrifying, horrifying. Where can we hide? Experts believe, according to Newsmax, experts believe the worst is yet to come after all these major holiday gatherings. So this is Newsmax, an allegedly right-wing news site. And it's their own reporter who said that. The worst is yet to come after major holiday gatherings. So he's basically buying into this narrative that it's all of us getting together to celebrate religious holidays. Anyway, just a side note for Newsmax there. By the way, Newsmax bought into this whole hysteria back at the beginning. Hook, line, and sinker. They're pathetic. Now, and Newsmax goes on, Britain is hard hit now by a worrisome new strain of the virus. Ireland is tightening coronavirus restrictions for another month. Prime Minister Michael Martin of Ireland says, we're going to do what we need to do to suppress the virus. So that's mentally deranged thinking, that you're going to suppress the transmission of an aerosol respiratory virus, but that no longer matters. We're not allowed to call this guy out for being psychologically unstable and not having a grip on the facts to the point where he's going to destroy his nation. Why? Because we've already done it. We've already done it, except for Kristi Noem. From the Dim New World file, Dan Bongino reports, despite the fact that lockdowns do enormous economic damage, they've been almost completely ineffective at stopping the coronavirus. Thank you, Mr. Bongino. South Dakota's Kristi Noem was savagely criticized when she didn't lock down. Her state now has a total of 1,488 deaths, 444 new cases on the day we downloaded the story. Anyway, basically, South Dakota's doing all right. It's bad. People are getting sick. People are dying, right? There's a new bug out there, and, you know, yeah, it's not pleasant, but they're getting by. They've manned up, and they've dealt with it. And who manned up? Kristi, a woman, which is a sad commentary on the state of masculine leadership in America, but I do give credit to Governor Kristi Noem where credit is due. When no one else had the guts to step up and take a risk, she did. Bongino goes on, how much of the economic misery we've seen this year was caused by the virus and how much by the overreaction of state governments? South Dakota's experience suggests most of the damage we saw was self-inflicted. That doesn't mean the coronavirus isn't serious. So even Dan Bongino has to do the obligatory statement that you are not in favor of viral infection. Look, I'm against viruses. I'm against people getting sick. I want to make that perfectly clear. Dan, we never used to have to make that clear. And so Dan, you and I are victims of the new paradigm where you have to point out that you don't want other people to get sick or die as you go on to criticize tyrannical communist dictators taking down our civilization right in front of us. They're taking it right in front of us, right before us, in front of God and everybody. But that doesn't mean that doesn't mean I don't care about people. I care. All right, I guess that's it for the Weekly Worldview this week. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and at American Right to Life, and at the Personhood Alliance, and at Recall Gavin 2020. We sent a donation. We're all for that. If other states had a means of recalling their governors, we would donate to them as well. We got to get these bastards' attention and let them know that they've made us mad, if nothing else. We probably can't defeat them in any democratic sense, since they've got that all rigged six ways to Sunday. But we can at least scare them and make them uncomfortable, for crying out loud. I want Gavin Newsom and Andrew Cuomo and Jared Polis somewhere between freezing and boiling, and preferably closer to freezing, and if not there, closer to boiling at all times, in a political sense, of course. All right, that's it. I want to thank my other brother, Daryl, for making it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.